Hello, Guardians, and welcome to the Destiny Show podcast. I am your host, Cornholio, and tonight we are live with an amazing guest on the show. We're going to be talking about all things Destiny 2 Beyond Light. We're going to dive into the new Deepstone Crypt raid. We're going to talk about the Season of the Hunt. We're going to talk about food, and we're going to talk about all things Destiny 2. We're so, so excited. And on the show tonight, we welcome an amazing guardian. She is the author of some of our favorite cookbooks in the video game industry. Infused with a twist, she is a Twitch streamer, she's a foodie, she's the author of the official Destiny cookbook, Fallout cookbook, and the upcoming Street Fighter cookbook. She's also a blogger, and she is an amazing, amazing cook. And we're excited to have her on the show, Victoria Rosenthal. Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, we're so excited to have you on. And we also have my co-host who's back with me tonight, Shadow Price. How's it going tonight?
Yeah, it's going pretty good. Just kind of winding down from the grind. Well, actually, you know, it might pick up again like a little bit tonight and tomorrow, because we got the raid coming up this weekend. So I've been, you know, trying to play and work, play Beyond Light and also work at the same time, and try to sleep, and Black Friday shopping, which has seemed to take over all of November. So yeah, keeping it all in perspective as best we can. But
yeah. Oh yeah. And you know, on the topic of Black Friday shopping, I almost feel like we are almost done and it's not even Black Friday. I feel like by the time we get to Black Friday, there will be nothing more to buy because I mean, everything that we had for Black Friday sales, pretty much I was able to get like a new TV, a laptop, all of the movies and shows that I've been wanting. I'm just missing a couple of games that hopefully I'll get a chance to pick up on Sunday, which is when the new sales start, and that's The Last of Us Part 2, Ghosts of Tsushima, and then there's going to be a really awesome deal on the BioShock collection on the Switch for only $15. I can't help myself. I'm going to have to pick that up as well. But other than that, I think, we're getting to that point. I probably could use a kitchen cart, and we've talked about this, but I have hardly any counter space in my kitchen. And I needed something a little bit extra so I can put all of my kitchen gadgets onto it and maybe get a microwave. But although I don't really use a microwave too much anymore.
Yeah, I am also needing a kitchen cart because, my microwave takes up my counter space that I have because I have a pretty large microwave. Just to be able to free up that counter space and put some of the appliances and things on that cart would, you know, definitely help out more. I've been digging into the Black Friday shop and like, I feel like these new consoles have created such a like, you know, fever pitch and fury and things like that, that you can't even find the old consoles. Like, you know, I'm trying to, you know, my kids are getting at that age where I want to get them some of their own consoles. You know, only the oldest has one. And unfortunately, I mean, they have them, but the prices are not good. They're like when they've almost when they came out or something.
Well, like, that's wild.
Yeah, that's so crazy. And you know, I've been actually looking for you as well. And I'll tell you, I have not seen a single deal on the old consoles. I would think that, you know, all of the Black Friday ads would have some pretty sweet deals on the last gen consoles.
And there's been nothing.
No, there's nothing.
Yeah. So I've had to turn to eBay just to see if I could find something, you know, that's open box. Even I would take an open box, like, you know, if I have to. There's also Cyber Monday, so I guess there's still hope, you know, that maybe something will happen on Cyber Monday too. So
there is hope for the future.
Mm-hmm.
No fun intended. And Guardians, tonight on the Destiny Show, we're gonna put Victoria Rosenthal on the hot seat for our discussion with the Guardians. We're going to learn much more about Victoria. We're going to learn about the Destiny cookbook and so much more. And we're going to dive into the latest news from Bungie. So, Victoria, I hope you're ready.
Oh, I'm ready.
All right, let's get to it. So the first question we have for you is, how did you get started in your cooking journey?
So it's about 8 years ago now. Actually, we'll rewind a little more. 9 years ago, I had moved to Houston and I was like, okay, I'm in a new city. I want to kind of keep in touch with old friends up in Chicago. And a lot of them were like, well, I don't know how to cook. Can you help me come up with some like easy recipes to do? So I started a random food blog. This was not games related. And I started putting some recipes up, kind of saying, hey, friends, here they are. Enjoy them. That lasted like 6 months because I got bored. I was like, oh, whatever. This isn't fun. I'm just putting recipes up. I got that itch again a year later. And I was like, oh, what if I do my two loves? Video games and food. Let's combine them because there's a lot of games with food. And I'll say this was around the time that Guild Wars 2 came out, and their cooking system is actually what kind of inspired me to like do this dive of, oh, let me recreate this item with all the ingredients that they use for each of their recipes. So I started doing that, and now we fast forward to 8 years later, I'm still doing it and writing cookbooks for it now.
That's pretty awesome. It's funny because food does happen a lot in, you know, games. Like, you know, you play role-playing games where you have to, you know, you have to fix your meals.
Oh, yeah. It's grown over the years. I'd say just in general, I think it's because of the age group of people working in the game industry. Everyone wants to be a foodie. They'll take pictures of their food. That's just kind of what we do.
So guilty of that.
We all do it. I think that's why they all started going, well, the characters need to eat. Let's take these things from role-playing games and just kind of add it on to it. Gives them extra stats, gives a little boost. And yeah, they, instead of just going, oh, let's put a piece of bread in, that's enough. Or a piece of chicken. That was like enough back in the day. Now it's, let's make the most elaborate dish that makes someone really hungry.
Yeah. Yeah, even like Breath of the Wild, where you have to craft your meals, like, you know, it's to survive the harsh environment, the cold environment.
Oh, yeah, did a great job with food. And I was like, wow, Legend of Zelda game with detailed food? Yes, please.
Yes, yes. Which makes me even more excited for the sequel, like hopefully coming next year. So, yeah, definitely. And
I don't know about you, but I would love to see a Zelda Breath of the Wild cookbook maybe in the future.
I mean, if Nintendo wants to come over and say, hi, you want to do one? I'm interested. I'm here.
Or is there a cyberpunk cookbook maybe for the future?
Hey, if game companies want to talk, I'm game for more cookbooks.
Cyberpunk would be really cool. I mean, there would be really interesting dishes. You know, definitely some, like, probably some form of sushi maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm such a huge fan of sushi. Sushi is my favorite food, really.
It's so good.
It's his fault, Corn's fault. That's why it's my favorite too. Like, spaghetti used to be my favorite, but sushi has taken the top spot.
Yeah, and you know, this year I have been cooking way, way more than ever before. I did cook a little bit when I lived with Shadow Price, but even then I wasn't very good. And that was so many years ago, back in the college days. But now I've been doing a lot of HelloFresh and EveryPlate, and I've been learning a lot about cooking, and it gave me a ton of confidence in what I'm doing, because now I get to a point where it's like I'm cooking food and I feel like, you know, this is really good. It's actually better than what I would get at the restaurant sometimes.
And that
gave me a lot of motivation to cook a little bit more. And now I have to find the time, especially with all the gaming that we've been doing lately.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, cooking is a lot of confidence building, because I think a lot of people are afraid to just jump into the kitchen and start cooking something. They think it's this fine thing that only certain people could do, but it just takes a lot of practice. And getting used to flavors that you like, and then figuring out how to like make it better. Oh,
and actually, it's great because everything's online. Like you literally can just recipe, boom, Google, and you have recipes. Yeah. Like,
and and the thing I always tell people is recipes are suggestions. They're going to tell you what to do. Do not be afraid to change it. If you don't like tomatoes, but you really like everything else that's in that dish, remove the tomatoes.
Yeah. Like I've been trying to get adventurous with my Instapot. Like I got this Instapot and it's amazing because it cooks food so fast because it has like a pressure cooker. Like it pressure cooks the food and it comes out incredible. Like I made this bacon barbecue meatloaf in it with like these creamy garlic mashed potatoes. And it came out fantastic. It was like the best meatloaf I've ever had.
Sounds wonderful.
So, yeah. And I mean, it was just, even my son liked it. And my son doesn't like barbecue sauce.
Oh, wow.
He doesn't like potatoes either, but he loved the potatoes too. Cause they were just so like, they were so creamy cause they were cooked in at the bottom of the Instapot where, and I put the meatloaf in a pan and sealed it and then pressure cooked it for like 20 some minutes.
Oh, wow.
It came out really good.
Yeah, I think I bought a pressure cooker like 3 Black Fridays ago or 4 Black Fridays ago. I think I used it once. So I'm going to have to take advantage of all of the cooking that I can be doing.
Even chilies you can cook in it. You can cook ramen. You can cook spicy ramen in it too. And I think I might have to check out Victoria's cookbook and maybe cook some ramen. Like use your recipe and cook some ramen in the... in the Instapot.
I'd be curious how that goes because truth be told, I do not own any pressure cookers. For some reason, that is one of the one tool that kind of like spooks me a little. The idea of, I guess it's older pressure cookers where it could just explode on you. And it's
always
in the back of my head. Dangerous. I'm like,
with this, you got to be careful too. You got to make sure that you don't have any skin near when you're releasing that steam. Oh,
that steam is so hot. I've made mistakes in the kitchen and it takes one like burn for you to be like, okay, I can't let this happen again.
Right. Yep. Exactly.
So many moons ago, I had a job at KFC and I was the manager. And whenever the cook called out, guess who's cooking? I am. And I am not good at cooking. And I remember one time I spilled some like oil on my like hand and my face. I had to go to the ER and it was just not fun. And I just don't like that kind of scared me from away from cooking. And it took me a while to kind of get back. And even now I feel like sometimes like I have oil just kind of spitting out when I'm making chicken on the stove. But, you know, it's not that bad. It's not, you know, nearly as bad. Although I'll tell you something. I have a problem with the smoke detector going off at the worst possible time. And I'm 5'4". I'm fairly short. So for me to reach that freaking smoke detector to disable it, it's a whole nother project, let me tell you. And I feel like the entire like building starts to like just go off as soon as like there's any little bit of smoke. So sometimes I actually have to open my door in order to let some of the smoke out so my smoke detector doesn't go off. But that happened a few times. And I think that's part of the reason why I don't really make breakfast or like bacon, because
that will smoke up.
The worst when it comes to releasing smoke.
Oh my gosh. I imagine every cook has made that mistake where just smoke's going to happen. And then sometimes too much smoke happens, all controlled. And the smoke alarm is going to go off. And I have a dog. He does not like the smoke alarm going off. And he knows if I turn on the vent above the stove that I'm trying to stop it. But the moment that vent turns on, he's like, nope, I'm out. I can't. You might set off the alarm. I don't need this right now.
Awesome. Yeah. Now, what kind of dog do you have?
I have a Corgi.
Oh, that's nice. So cute. That's awesome. I have a Pomeranian Chihuahua. And he's pretty feisty. He likes to be pretty vocal. Whenever I'm cooking, he's pretty much hanging out with me because, you know, he's smart. He knows where the good food is at.
Oh, yeah.
And I try to share with him as much as I can, unless I'm making something with onions, for example. But I try to be accommodating to him because it's pretty much me and him. So if I'm cooking, normally I can't finish all the food. I don't eat mm-hmm. that much. So usually we share more often than not.
Mm-hmm.
So Victoria, on the topic of the Destiny cookbook, I'm curious, how did the Destiny cookbook come to life?
So I will admit a lot of this is Insight Editions, the publishing house I work with. They handle that. My editor there, Amanda, she reached out to me after, what was it? Is this 2 years ago now? I think it was 2 years ago, October. She said, hey, we have this other project going on that's going to start up soon. Do you know the game Destiny? And I was like, wait, a cookbook for Destiny? Are we sure we're talking about the same game? I didn't think there was much food in the game. She's like, yeah. Bungie's really interested in this. And I was like, you know what? Sure. I've played the game. I've enjoyed it. I enjoy the game. And I'm going to go around, shoot a bunch of monsters, kind of casually pick up items. It's kind of a turn my brain off game. I don't PvP because that makes me a little too, I do not have the aim to deal with that anymore at my old age. But she was like, okay, let's talk about it. We'll have this happen. They were working on another project with them, a non cookbook. And she was like, well, they want to do this. I think it was January after. Yeah, a little after January. Where she's like, okay, finally. This was after they left Activision. So there was a little delay because of that. So mm-hmm. the Bungie was finally like, okay, we're ready to start this project. Let's get going. And I was like, okay. I already had started doing kind of a minor lore dive, kind of making sure if we could find anything. How are we going to pitch this? Who do we want to be the voice of the book? All these different things. I actually originally pitched, oh, hey, maybe Cade, even though he's passed away, he's a very good voice and he exists. And I could see him going around making notes of places he's been around the universe. Bungie was like, well, we gotta move on from Cade. And I'm like, okay, let's keep thinking. So I pitched like a random character, because not thinking Ava at all. It's like, oh, a person in the tower, they could have a shop there. And they're kind of like, they go around exploring and getting different cuisines. We finally landed on Ava.
Ava Vivante. Like, yeah, I was thinking the same. Yeah. Yeah.
They were like, she would be perfect. She handles all the holidays. And I think when I started doing my original dive, the dawning had not happened. So this was like a little before December. And I was like, oh, that's weird. They suddenly added a bunch of cookies in the game.
Oh, sure. <yeah. laughs>
I'm like, okay. And then with Ava, I was like, okay, this does make sense. Let's go ahead and run with Ava. I did at one point pitch, oh, the Drifter would fit. I mean, he had a bar. I'm a big fan of the Drifter, but they said very quickly, no, we can't do the Drifter. I was like, I think it was we don't know how where he's going to be kind of situation. It's like, oh, okay.
Now the Drifter would have some good drink recipes.
My gosh, he would. And I was able to at least include him in like the little meal prep thing. So it was nice to include his character there. So we ended up with Ava, and I was able to work with the Bungie team, and just kind of like, it was a small team of a few people. And they were like, oh, hey, this is what we're thinking. And we did a lot of back and forth. And I was like, well, if Ava's writing it, she's obviously not left Earth. So we can't really highlight all the different planets. But she could at least have mentions of the different guardians that she's kind of interacted with to kind of give at least a little flair of like, oh, she knows there's stuff out there. But the focus is the tower for the most part and the little events that she typically hosts. So it was a lot of back and forth. And I think one of the harder things was making sure that the photography matches the world that Destiny has the tower feel to it. And I wanted to make sure, because I feel like light and darkness is a big thing. There are a lot of photos in there that are bright. And then there are a lot of photos that are also kind of on the darker side, hiding things in the background. I felt like including that was super important to make it feel like a Destiny cookbook.
That's cool. That's really cool that they that you were able to like draw that inspiration, mm-hmm. you know, and like, you know, basically just like bring this cuisine that you know Destiny has, you know, you thought up and, you know, and bring it to life actually into
a lot of them had There's logic behind a lot of the recipes. I know a lot of people like to make fun of the coleslaw because they're like, oh, hey, it's coleslaw. Why could we be super cool and creative about it? I'm like, well, no, I'm planning a meal of a southern, like the fried chicken. I'm like, you have to have coleslaw with it. It's just like really good. It's really tasty. And like the fried chicken was based off of the chicken dinner emote. Like,
there you go. Yeah.
I had a reason. It was there. And I just felt like it
every time
sense.
I used to get KFC, you got to get the coleslaw. The coleslaw.
Exactly.
Was
like, I was like,
my favorite part of the meal, practically.
Not every recipe is going to be like this astounding, wow, this is the best recipe and this makes sense. I was just a little sad that one of the recipes that they had to like advertise the book was the coleslaw. I'm like, there were so many better options. Why was that one of the first ones?
You know who would like the coleslaw, though, would be Failsafe, I bet. I bet Failsafe for sure. Would like the coleslaw.
Yeah, no, definitely. And, you know, I find it really interesting that, you know, you came up the idea of having Eva Levante pretty much be the spokesperson for the cookbook. And just a few months later, we have all of this like food type themes in the game with the Dawning where Eva Levante brought cookies mm-hmm. and we're doing all of these like cooking related things. And I'm curious if you were the person behind the idea to add that into the Dawning. I would be really curious about that.
I would say I wish I had any input into that, but that was right before the project started. So they, I guess, had it in mind because they wanted to do a cookbook. So it was just like, okay, yeah, we'll run with it. But I gave them more of a life instead of it just being random names. I'm like, well, here's the actual recipes. These are what it would be. These are what the Guardians are eating.
So nice. On the topic of working with the teams at Bungie, what was it like working with Bungie on the cookbook project? Were there any individuals who were really helpful or really useful in bringing the project to life?
I know a lot of it for me was I had like two or three meetings with them. And this is kind of true with any of the, well, I actually had a lot more interaction with Bungie than I did with Bethesda for the Fallout one. And even with the new Street Fighter one. I don't get too much interaction with the game companies a lot of time. I wish I did sometimes just to kind of get more of a feedback. Insights, kind of like that middleman in between, kind of relaying any questions I have, giving them any photos, making sure that everything's okay. I want to make sure one thing. Because there was a few. Lorraine was involved with the project. Lorraine McLees, one of the big art leads at Bungie. And she was very much so like, hey, this is the style. We need to make sure that all of the environments in the book make sense and that it feels. I did a lot of back and forth with sending photos to be like, here's some props I'm finding. Do these fit? Do these not fit? If I add these in, is this okay? So there was at least that back and forth to make sure that it fit in the Destiny world.
Right. Yeah, I could see that. That makes sense for sure.
And I do think that's one of the important things. That's like making sure it fits in the world was one of the most important things that they kept saying that it has to be and has to feel like Destiny. I was like, I got you. We'll do this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think you did a really phenomenal job. And I mean, that spicy ramen recipe, oh man, I still have to make it because I mean, I'm slowly but surely learning how to cook. I don't think I'm at the advanced stage of making spicy ramen, but now that I have your cookbook, I'm going to have to experiment. Maybe fail a few times, but it's okay. You know, I'll get it right.
You eventually. Learn from failure. That's the big thing. And I think the spicy ramen is one of the more popular recipes that I've seen people do. Again, because it is one of the more iconic dishes in the series. And I made sure at one point my editor was like, oh, well, we had another cookbook that had a chicken ramen. Could you do a pork one? I'm like, I don't think we should do a pork one because a pork ramen is a lot more complicated and takes several more days than this one does. A pork ramen, like if we're going to do a more traditional pork ramen, it's going to take about 3 days to get the broth
really
to be correct. So
why does it take that long, out of curiosity?
There's a lot of preparing the meats. So like the pork has to get round up, and then preparing, like the longer you let the broth cook, the thicker it'll get. I know that sounds a little weird, but when you have a good bowl of ramen, that broth is nice and thick. It is just hours of letting that cook, letting the bones kind of like get in there and get real thick. And it's real nice to do. But yeah, there's a lot of patience, and it's a bit more complicated of a method. So I wanted to be like, okay, this is, I always have to keep in mind that these recipes are for people who might not be in the kitchen ever. Like this might be their first time stepping into the kitchen going, oh, I could do this. I like this game. Let me do this. So I want to make sure there is a range. And when the most iconic dish is that spicy ramen, I can't have it being one of the very hard recipes in the book.
Would you say that's a beginner, intermediate, or expert dish?
Actually, it says in the book, and I have it right next to me. If I could pull up.
I would think probably intermediate. Probably.
Yeah, I have it under medium. So it does, because there's multiple elements kind of in play. There always will be multiple elements with a ramen. But this is definitely not a very hard ramen to do.
Okay. I will have to check that out, because I love me some ramen. I love me some spicy ramen. And I can't, I don't have really too many ramen shops around me. So it'd be nice to just make some ramen at home someday.
This has been a great go-to with the lack of like going out to restaurants or having them able to deliver good ramen. So it's like, okay, I'll make it at home.
Yeah, that's the other thing. I think, you know, now more than ever, I think cooking is a lot more, like, it makes a lot more sense now where you don't have to go out to the restaurants to, you know, get food directly. And getting stuff delivered with Uber Eats and all the other apps, it gets pretty pricey and expensive.
Yes.
So I think that, you know, cooking is a great skill to learn. And it's so awesome that you have the ability to infuse the world of gaming with the world of cooking in such a almost magical way. And it's so, so cool.
I mean, yeah, my biggest goal is for gamers to not be afraid of the kitchen, because it can't be a spooky place. I mean, there's fire and knives and stuff. But after a bit of practice, you get used to it. And I think them being able to connect to any game world, because with my food blog, there's a bunch of different games on there. It's that first step to go, oh, wait, this food's here. Oh, I could at least make that connection and make the effort to kind of make this meal. And, oh, this wasn't too bad. Let me make another one.
Yeah.
So now, Victoria, you have written 3 books now on video game cooking. I'm curious, are you a gamer yourself? And if so, what are your favorite games?
I am very much so a gamer. I've been playing video games since I was very young. I had an original Nintendo, but I did a lot of PC gaming. Actually, one of the games that I was a really big fan of back in the day was a Marathon. So that was, it was really neat being able to work on a project with Bungie, because I remember young me drawing like fan art and being like, Dad, send this to Bungie. Let them see that I love their game. So to be able to work on a project with Bungie was really nice. Young me's like, you did it. You contributed to the game world. But personal favorite games, I am a really, really big fan of the Yakuza series. So right now my time has been filled with playing Yakuza Like a Dragon. Game is very good. Everyone should check it out. I'm a big JRPG fan, so I like things like Dragon Quest and Persona. So that's the usual real house game.
Just had a sale on Persona 5 Royal. And I got it for like $20. So I was like,
it's a good game, but it is, I felt
so
like,
long, right? It's really long.
Because I played 5 when it came out, and then I was like, well, we have to play Persona 5R. So my husband and I actually, well, longer games like that, we'll kind of sit on the couch and play it together. I felt like we were playing that game for a very, very long time. I was just like, okay, we know most of this stuff. We just want to get to the end with all the new content that's there. And it's like, oh my gosh, this game was so long.
That's where I always hear, that's every thing I hear about that game is just so long. It's just such a long game.
Mm-hmm. It's really enjoyable.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I actually just picked up the new, well, I guess not necessarily the new, but the Final Fantasy 15 remake for PS4. And I'm excited.
Oh, you mean the Final Fantasy 7 remake?
Is it the Final Fantasy 7? I'm sorry.
Yeah, yes, the 7 remake. Yep.
That's what I meant to say. Okay, Final Fantasy 7 remake. And I'm really excited to play that. I heard nothing but great things about that game. So that's definitely one of the games that are on my list of games to play.
It's on my list too. I have not had a chance to play. Well, growing up, I did not have a PlayStation for a while, and Final Fantasy VII never made it in my household. And I was like, oh, maybe the remake will finally be my chance to do it. And then too many games keep coming out, and I haven't been able to like fit it in my schedule.
I started the game. I think I'm like 7 or 8 hours in, but it's mm-hmm. a lot of fun. Like I like what I've done with the game.
That's what I've heard. Yeah, I've seen some streamers play it too. And I'm like, this looks enjoyable. Like at some point it'll get added to my list of games to play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm really excited. Not only for Destiny with what we're going to be playing with Season of the Hunt, but and the new raid, of course, but also Cyberpunk. That has been getting delayed a few times now. I have a feeling once that game is out, I'm going to be playing that game so much. I've been really, really excited for that game because CD Projekt Red, I mean, they're phenomenal when it comes to creating these massive immersive worlds.
Oh, yeah.
Witcher 3 was amazing.
It was a really good game and has lots of food in it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. Actually, have they been approached to do a Witcher cookbook?
No, not that I know of.
Witcher cookbook.
That would make so much sense, though.
It would. I mean, I have a few Witcher recipes on my site, so that exists. So there's free content there.
Nice.
So, Victoria, speaking of your site, we know that you're also a blogger at a little website called Pixelated Provisions. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit more about your blog and what you do there?
Yeah, so each week, usually each week, unless something happens, I recreate a recipe from whatever video game I'm feeling like, and whatever games have food in it. I mean, I've done a lot from Guild Wars 2. As I mentioned earlier, that was the game that kind of really started my blog. I've done things from like the Divinity Original Sin 2, a lot of the JRPGs I've played. So Dragon Quest has some, and I have Yakuza ones there, Final Fantasy 14. But I tend to look for different recipes. If the game has like in-game items to make the recipe, I try to make sure to include that. One of the new games that I've been doing a lot of recipes for is Bugsnax. And I have made sure that with any of my bug snacks recipes that it is part bug, part snack. So I've been using a lot of cricket flour for those recipes. So that's been a little fun experiment. But yeah, there's lots of different games that I cover on the site.
And you know, that's it's really interesting that you mentioned bug snacks because we had Phil Tipitoski on the podcast very early on, and he was an amazing, amazing guest.
Oh, yeah, he's great. I actually went to college with him. So.
Oh, wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, no, so I do know, I have a few friends at the Young Horses. We went to school together when they were working on Octodad 1, the first one. It was a school project, and I knew the group, and I was like, oh, look at you guys. You're doing an indie game.
That is so cool. Wow. My kids love Octodad. Like, two of them have beat it. They wanted to hop on my PC to play it, and they played right through it. Like, they're just like,
yeah, it's everything. Such a silly game.
Yeah.
Bugsnax is really, really good. I'm about a little over halfway through it, so I've been having a lot of fun.
What are you playing that on right now?
I'm playing it on the Epic Store.
Okay.
Just because I wasn't sure if our PS5 was going to get in. And
did you guys get your PS5?
We did. So that came in. So that was a good thing. Love the controller.
I know, right?
It's oh my God, it's so nice.
I heard good things. I still have it. It's in the box. I still have not had a chance to set it up. Beyond Light and work and everything else has taken up my time.
I mean, we set it up right away because our PS4 was like on the brink of death because it was an original PS4 that came out. And wow. It was just loud.
It lasted that long. Huh?
It lasted. It did its job. I put in the new Yakuza Like a Dragon in there to see if it runs, and it just sounded like it was taking off. And I'm like, I'm going to take that out. I guess I'm waiting 2 days till we get our PS5 and we'll play that then.
Makes sense.
But yeah, I've been playing Bugsnax on the PC because it's easier to stream. And I'm also streaming it just to be like, hi, friends, I make Bugsnax. And now we're going to enjoy the game and experience that.
That's really cool. Actually, Bugsnax was the first game that I played on my PS5. And it's such a fun game. It's just a game that you can just kind of get lost in, and it's not too challenging. It's just a fun game. I'm about 2 hours in. I haven't had too much time to play because Destiny 2 being
exactly like too many games at once. Like I said, exactly. Just last week, it was like, how many games do you want to play at once?
Yeah, and I mean, they launched these consoles in the 2 days of each mm-hmm. other, you know, and you got Series X that comes out, and if you got Game Pass, and if you've got any library from Xbox, it doesn't matter. You can play all those games on Series X. So it's like you have all these games at your disposal. Yes, there's no like new games that are exclusive, except, you know, maybe like Gears Tactics. Mm-hmm. That was like their exclusive game. But they have so many other games. And then you got PS5, you know, they have some backwards compatibility too. And they got new games. They got Spider-Man Miles Morales, and they got Bugsnax, and they got the new Demon Souls remake.
Yeah. My husband's playing Demon Souls right now. I could hear him like in the other room playing with someone.
Nice. Like that game looks gorgeous. I mean, I'm not going to lie.
It's wild because I remember like seeing the original Demon Souls and being like, wow, this is so cool. I can't play those games. I watch my husband play them. And seeing the new one, I was like, wow, you can see everything. It's all really pretty.
Yeah, that's the problem, though. Those games are tough. They're tough as nails. And I tried playing Bloodborne, and I love the world, and I love
the looks of those games and everything, but I know I'm not the best gamer. So I watch my husband play, and I enjoy just sometimes watching games. I mean, we all watch people on Twitch. It's the same thing here. I just watch him play a game, and we both experience.
You get to enjoy the games vicariously through your husband's playing, so it's perfect.
The same thing, yeah. Exactly.
So, Victoria, what do you do when you're not cooking, writing on your blog, or streaming and playing video games?
I mean, a lot of it is playing video games, like, outside the stream. But if we're going to do not related to that, spending time with my corgi. We used to do agility with him, but he's 8 and a half now. And the person we did agility with and obviously with the pandemic happening, that kind of doesn't happen anymore. But we like going on long walks doing that. I'm also a pretty big fan of board games. So that's probably one of the things I've really missed with the whole pandemic is having friends over just to play some board games.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite board game?
If I were to pick a favorite, oh, that's always hard. I really like Power Grid, Trajan. Arkham Horror is another one that makes it out a lot. Games like that, yeah.
Wow. I don't think I've ever heard any of those games.
I play a lot of they're big thinking games for sure. I mean, Power Grid is you're going around buying power plants and you're bidding with your friends to kind of get the best power plant and trying to like power different cities and the first one to power so many cities. So it's a number cruncher.
That's an actual board game?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Cool. I would think that would be something you could play online.
I imagine. Yeah, there have been some board games that have been like transferred over slowly to like a PC. I mean, there's a tabletop like simulator. A lot of them will have a few different board games on there that you could like experience. I miss having, because it would have a bunch of people come over. I'd make a bunch of food, share the food. And it's just like, oh.
Yeah.
Not right now.
So, Victoria, I'm curious. Do you have a dream book that you'd love to create for a specific video game?
Yakuza.
Something. Okay.
I love that series. When I did a reflection last year on my blog of like my game series of the like the century, because I was like, okay, we're wrapping up, right? It was Yakuza, and I was like, oh, I really, really, really would love to do a book for that series. Another one would be, I think Breath of the Wild would be nice.
Yeah,
getting in, I can imagine getting into Nintendo's like, hello, would you like me to actually do content? Is a little harder to make that happen than getting in touch with a lot of the American
Nintendo
companies.
Nintendo has kind of a walled garden a little bit.
Yeah. You know, yeah. It is difficult to convince them to do like official projects and get them on board with anything.
They're
of them.
So old world style, yep. Like that. They have a regimen. They have a, you know, they just stick to that regimen, you know, but then they do like a lot of magical things, like open up Super Nintendo World.
Yeah, exactly. You know, they'll do that too.
Yeah. So
another one, I would love to do Baldur's Gate 3, even though I haven't played Baldur's Gate 3, but I love Larian Studios. I love Divinity. That would be another one that I'd be like, oh, can I either Divinity or like Baldur's Gate? I'd be like, yes, that'd be so cool.
Very
That's
cool.
Awesome.
So on that note, what is your favorite cuisine and what is your favorite food?
All right, my favorite food to like win my heart, I like banh mi's. It's a Vietnamese sandwich that I had discovered when I moved down here to Houston, because there's a pretty big Vietnamese community and it's a simple sandwich. I mean, in the book, we have the banh mi burger. So it kind of takes influences from a traditional banh mi, but it's a grilled meat with pickled daikon and carrots and then cucumbers. It's so simple. Oh, and cilantro too. It's so simple, but so delicious. So very, very good. And I was happy I was able to like include it in some way in the book. But cuisine, oh, I love so many. I really like Japanese cuisine. Indian cuisine is very good. Could go back to my some family roots and say Venezuelan food. I really like. I could eat all the food. Basically, I don't think there's any that I'm like, ugh, why am I eating this?
Is Vietnamese and like Laos like very similar with their food? Like pho.
Yes. Like, yes. Pho is a very big, like if you go to any pho place, they'll typically have banh mi. The beauty of banh mi also, it's like $5 for a sandwich, sub $5. I've gone to places here in Houston where I could get like an 8-inch sandwich for $3.
Oh yeah.
It's wild.
Yeah. They have this dish that I really like there at my pho place that's called, it's a beef medallion. Like they make these like sauteed beef medallions and they put it on vermicelli.
Oh,
I love it. That's like one of my favorite dishes there.
Vietnamese was one that I did not have much growing up. And I'm just so happy how big the Vietnamese community is here in Houston that I'm just like, this food is so good. Why did I not have this before?
Yeah, they have like these Saigon wings that I got there too. That were really, really good as well. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. It's good food. Definitely.
Man, you guys are making me hungry. Very cool. So, Victoria, what cooking advice would you give to someone like me, who's a blueberry guardian when it comes to cooking? And I'm just starting to learn how to cook halfway decently. What advice would you give to someone like me?
Start small. Don't be afraid to like pick up some things that are already kind of half pre-done. So if a recipe calls to use chicken and you're like, well, I don't want to cook the chicken kind of there, get a rotisserie chicken, use that as like the starting point and then do the rest of the recipe. Try to find recipes that you know you will enjoy. So things that you've had at restaurants, look up some recipes there, look in a cookbook, say, I like to put little like tabs on cookbooks to be like, oh, I want to try this. I want to try this. And try to just read it and follow them to the T. If there's an ingredient you know you don't like, don't just remove it if you're not feeling comfortable. Or sometimes just ask out into the world of Twitter. Someone might respond and say, oh, you could replace it with this. Or, oh, you could do this instead of that because you don't like it. But the big thing is be patient with the food. I've seen my husband is an intermediate chef because he's learned over the years from my like cooking things that he should and shouldn't do. And a lot of it is confidence. It's just like getting confident. He'll go, oh, it takes me like so much longer to cut than it does for you. I'm like, well, I do more cooking. I've practiced and I've constantly, my speed gets quicker and quicker over time. It's not a race. Take your time. Make sure your knives are sharp. Don't cut with a dull knife. You're more likely to cut yourself that way. And yeah, just keep practicing. Pick recipes you enjoy. Follow them. Make the changes to make it to something you would like. Ask friends what they would maybe suggest. And just kind of take those baby steps. You don't need to buy every single piece of equipment. As long as you have a good knife and a cutting board and a pan and a baking sheet and a pot, you're good for the most part to go.
Yeah, I think you mentioned something really interesting, and that's having knives that are not dull. And before I moved to this new apartment, I used some pretty crappy knives that made cooking almost impossible, I would say. And since I got a pretty decent knife set, I think it cut down my prep time substantially. And I'm able to actually cook, you know, a lot better without making things very sloppy. Like, especially if you cut tomatoes, you need to have a good knife. If you don't have a good knife, then it gets really mushy and just not ideal.
I mean, the big danger with it being dull is you're going to have to put more pressure to like try and cut it. And if you had a finger there, that's just, you're putting more pressure. You're going to cut yourself. You don't want to like make that mistake. Sharp knives are super important. If there's one thing that you want to splurge on in the kitchen, I say it's a knife.
It's really great advice. And I totally agree with that. Yeah, that's great. So, Victoria, what advice would you give on making spicy ramen that Cade 6 would be proud of?
So the big advice I would say is definitely make sure you do the eggs the day before, at least. They have to sit in the seasoning to really get that flavor. I think they have a shelf life of about 3 to 5 days in there. So getting them a day ahead is worth it. I like them at about day two because they've really absorbed it. Then they start getting really nice. But prepping that ahead of time is going to save you the next day when you're working with the recipe. Now, my spicy ramen might not be as spicy as you like. Go ahead and add additional shichimitogarashi or the gochujang. Add a little bit more just so it spices it up.
That's great advice. Okay. And I think I'm going to challenge myself. In the next 30 days, I'm going to make a goal to make spicy ramen, and I'm going to use your recipe to make it. So that's my goal.
Awesome. I think the nice thing with this recipe is it is going to push you out of the usual comfort zone, I'd say, if you don't do a lot of like international cooking. It's definitely kind of has some influence from Korean cuisine and Japanese cuisine, with the gochujang in there, pulling from Korean, the kimchi pulling from Korea. And then obviously ramen itself is Japanese focused. So you're probably going to have to go out to markets that you're usually not used to. But this is a good step for you to start getting used to extra ingredients that you usually wouldn't have in the house. And you might find out you love them.
Very cool. And Victoria, what is your favorite recipe from the Destiny cookbook?
Okay, let me think. This is always a hard one. I will say between the three books, well, I'm not going to count the Street Fighter one too much because I don't have like a physical copy. So I haven't like bookmarked pieces. I have it all digitally. But from the Fallout and the Destiny one, I cook more from the Destiny one. I really like the recipes in this book. But the one that I like to like spoil myself with is the duck poutine that's in there. It's really good. I mean, it's potato wedges, duck gravy, cheese curds. But it's perfect. It's delicious. It's a lot of work, but it's so worth it.
I'm going to have to check that out. Okay, very cool. And I feel like I have so many things to experiment with when it comes to cooking, because I started pretty much by getting boxes of HelloFresh, and mm-hmm. they give you pretty simple instructions and all of the ingredients. So now I'm starting to kind of get to a point where I had all the meals from there, and I mm-hmm. want to kind of branch out a little bit and, you know, try some different ingredients that they may not have with HelloFresh. Mm-hmm. So I've been going to the supermarket more and trying to find different ingredients that I can kind of experiment with. And yeah, I think this will be really, really helpful after the whole craziness with Beyond Light. Mm-hmm. After we're done playing, I'll hopefully get back to normalcy where I can start cooking a little bit more again, because mm-hmm. I've been eating out more often than I care to admit right now. But all for the greater good, of course. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so I'm really excited about that, and I'm definitely going to have to check out some of your recipes and to see what I can come up with.
Oh, yeah, the book definitely does push you to expand your pantry, expand ingredients that you might not be used to, and it could be intimidating, but you'll find things that you really like, and then there'll be staples in your kitchen forever.
Awesome. So, Victoria, on that note, what is next for you in your journey?
Well, in my journey, obviously the Street Fighter book kind of sort of got announced. It's on Amazon right now. That comes out later, middle of next year. I'm technically done working on it. That's now Insight is putting it all together and finalizing that up. But for now, I don't know what my next project will be. But I'll continue working on weekly recipes on my website. I'm actually starting to experiment with video work, trying to maybe take my recipes that are on the site right now and turn them into YouTube videos, because everyone learns a little differently. And the Twitch streaming has kind of helped with that, because I'll do live cooking streams to kind of show people different methods. I'll follow recipes from my books, follow recipes from my website, just kind of giving extra tips so people can understand, oh, this is why I did this in this recipe. Let them ask questions as I'm doing that. And yeah, just kind of continue to grow my blog and put more recipes up.
Very cool. And now, on the topic of your Twitch stream, do you have a specific schedule that you follow when you go live?
My schedule can be a little chaotic sometimes. It really does depend on like my work week. I typically try to aim for Tuesday and Thursday evenings around 5 p.m., 4 p.m., 5 p.m. Central Time. And those can go from anywhere to 2 to 3 hours. And that's usually, I usually try to do at least 2 cooking streams a week. Next week's going to be a little crazier. I'm going to do a few extra ones because it is Thanksgiving week. And since I'm not having people over, I'm just going to celebrate it on my Twitch channel and show people how to set up a Thanksgiving meal over 3 days, because there's about 3 days of prep. 2 days that of prep before really the cool. first day. Yeah.
Nice.
That's awesome. Well, wow, Victoria, thank you so much for sharing your amazing journey with us and everything that you've done with your cooking and the books that you released. We're really excited to dive in not only more in the Destiny cookbook, but also the upcoming project that you're working on with the Street Fighter book that's mm-hmm. coming out. Now, do we have an official release date for that?
I think the window is June sometime of next year. That's at least what the Amazon listing has said. But things can change with everything, with the pandemic going on and all that fun stuff.
Definitely understandable. Well, we'll definitely keep an eye out for that. And Guardians, we have some more things to talk about tonight. We have the Destiny 2 season of The Hunt is now live. It's happening right now as we speak. And we're going to dive into what's new in season of The Hunt. Of course, we have a returning character from the past who took our beloved Cade Six, the Crow, Prince Uldren, and he is back in the new season of The Hunt. We have the rise of Hive Gods, and we have some interesting new activities that we're playing right now and new quest lines that we're going to be diving into. We also have a new activity with the Wrathborn Hunt public event activity. Now, I'm not sure what that is exactly. Shadow Price, you might know more than I do because maybe you've had a chance to play it.
I know a little bit. I haven't completely dived in. It's basically you get with Crow, and he has these lures that you have to basically you craft this lure that he gives you, and you got to get it from doing like strikes and, you know, Crucible and Gambit, and you set the lure, and then that starts the hunt, and then you go to either I think it's the Dreaming City or Tangled Shore. Do these hunts, basically. You like fight these bosses, and you could plug different mods into the lures, and it's an interesting take. And I haven't fully had a chance to dive into it yet because I'm still doing stuff in, you know, the Beyond Light, the post campaign, and there's still a bunch of stuff. I'm trying to get my fragments and my aspects for my subclass, for the stasis subclass. So I haven't fully had a chance to dive in yet, but hopefully probably won't do it until after the raid, I think, until that first 24 hours, and we'll have a chance to dive in to it. Cause just right now we're trying to grind for power and, you know, get, you know, my stuff for my subclasses, fragments and the aspects. But it seems interesting. Though, still, you know, it's interesting story aspect what they're doing with the Crow and Osiris and the Spider.
And you know, almost the description that you describe this as, it almost sounds like in Forsaken when we went and fought the Barons, right?
Something similar, yeah, because you go into the different, like, yeah, you go into Tangled Shore and Dreaming City, and you're going to these like platforms, whatever the structure is, hive structure, and you're placing this lure down there, and it like summons the monster. And so it's kind of interesting.
Okay, so we're not going into the lost sectors, we're going to like different locations around the planets, correct?
Right. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay, interesting. And I would be curious what kind of rewards we get at the end of these activities. I hope there's something there.
Yeah, there's some new weapons and armor that you get from them. I'm not exactly sure exactly. You know, there are a few new weapons, but some of them are the weapons that you get in the season pass too. Like you get the new grenade launcher from the season pass, and you get the new scout rifle from the season pass. And I think those are also in the loot pool. And then there's a couple others. I think there's like there's definitely a submachine gun. And I hear that submachine gun actually really good. And I can't remember the other weapons that are in there, but there's a small loot pool that's associated with it. So
and we have a new exotic quest for Hawkmoon is back. Now I'm curious, is that quest live right now, or is it
it's not live yet? No, they haven't. I imagine it's going to be tied into the Crow, like the season of The Hunt somehow. It probably will unlock, maybe if it doesn't unlock next week, maybe the week after next, you know. So I'm sure they have it tied into that story though.
Yeah, and I know that Bungie put out a new page for Season of the Hunt, and they have a little bit of a description I'd like to share on the story. And they state the following: entire planets have vanished in the chaos that follows. Zivu Arath, the Hive God of War, boldly moves to seize power. If left unchecked, she threatens a solar system already in turmoil. While investigating the growing threat, Osiris finds himself in need of help. Fortunately, a new and yet familiar ally known as the Crow joins you in the rescue. I thought this was really interesting because when we first heard about the Crow or Prince Uldren coming back into the game, I didn't imagine him being an ally. I imagined him being someone who we have to, you know, either fight or someone who, at the very least, we have some kind of hostility towards because, I mean, he killed Cade Six, right? So I find it really interesting to see that we're going to be fighting alongside with Cade Six, or with the Crow, excuse me.
I'm really curious to see how that goes down.
Did you guys get a chance to do that intro mission
yet? I have not yet, but I know the moment I saw his like face, I was like, this guy, why?
See, I don't want to talk too much because I have played the intro mission. So I'm not going to speak, you know, specific in any specifics or anything like that. But I like what they've done. I like the twist. I've always liked the twist of them bringing the Uldren back because I always thought he was a interesting character, you know, and he was used. He was manipulated by Riven. You know, and like he basically was, you know, he was manipulated. He, you know, was basically just corrupted, you know, that he became corrupted by Riven and Savathun and things like that, you know, and he just became like a puppet, you know, he was just playing his part. And unfortunately, you know, it led to his demise, but then now he's back as a guardian, you know. So it's like, yes, there's going to be some inner turmoil there now. Now there's going to be answers that need to be, you know, he needs to answer for things. But, you know, everything isn't what it seems, too. So because there's the plot line that's developing once you guys actually, you know, do that first mission and stuff. So.
Well, and also he does not remember anything. So, I mean,
he doesn't.
He was approach him about like, hey, why'd you kill Cade? He's going to look at you like, well, what are you talking about? I don't know what you're talking about. I didn't know such thing. And, you know, it's interesting that you mentioned that he was possessed and manipulated, because if you recall back in Forsaken many, many moons ago, when he appeared as a character, you could see like a glow in his eyes as if he was just possessed or controlled by some alternate power. So
yeah. It was Riven. He was completely corrupted by Riven, the Amakara that we slew in Forsaken. So, yeah, it was. It's interesting. I really like the angle that they, you know, I really wanted his character to come back because I always thought he was a fascinating character, even though we didn't like him in D1 either because he, you know, emo brother, you know, just kind of like he just had like some sort of, I don't know, he kind of seemed douchey, I guess, in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. But I thought it was interesting what they're doing with his character now. And it's almost like that when I talk about it, you know, all the time, that original story when, you know, we see him in the Cosmodrome, that first Bungie trailer from E3 in 2013. And he's, you know, he's called the Crow there. And look at him again. Now he's the Crow. He's Brandon Lee. No, he's not Brandon Lee. So.
So we do have some other stuff that is new in the new Season of the Hunt. We have the Fang of Zivu Arath seasonal artifact. And I haven't really had too much time to really dive into that. Is there anything that sticks out to you with this new artifact this season? Any abilities that are really cool in your opinion?
Well, the good thing is you can the abilities that you use for the champions, the mods, you can apply it to your armor, so you don't take up a weapon slot. It applies to your armor now, which is a good change, I feel like. So you can add that extra mod slot on your weapon without having to take it up for a champion mod.
That's interesting. So you can customize more with the new season than how you were able to. You have more flexibility.
A little bit, yeah. I wouldn't say it's like, you know, groundbreaking or anything, you know, but a few quality of life changes they've made with it. I'd like to see them, if they do end up taking it further and allowing for more customization, I would like to see them go more even further into the customization and RPG elements of it. But, you know, it's it is an improvement, I feel like.
Definitely. And we have another thing that if you have the paid season pass, you can unlock an exotic shotgun called the Duality. Have you had a chance to play around with that weapon?
Yeah, I've been using it because I'm trying to unlock the catalyst so I can, you know, you have to do a bunch of objectives to get the catalyst to unlock for it. So I've been using it. I've had it equipped in Strikes and Crucible and Gambit, you know, trying to get the catalyst done for it. And it's a decent weapon. I wouldn't say it's top tier or anything like that, but I do like its reload animation. It like shows you putting in like 6 shells at a time, just like a drum loader, almost like, which is pretty cool. So yeah, I mean, it's decent. It looks nice. It, yeah, it's not bad.
Now I'm curious, what do you think of the acquisition path to get this weapon? You know, where you pretty much have to level up your season pass. Would you rather that we had a dedicated quest line to get that weapon instead of the way that we are able to get it?
Or dropped RNG through RNG, like how we've gotten exotics before, you know, just dropped out in the world randomly or at a boss, you know, fight a boss and then boom, out pops that. Definitely would have been more interesting.
Yeah,
I feel. No, I agree. I would like them to do away with this, getting an exotic after, you know, the first level of the season pass, if you, you know, paid for the season. You know, I get it. It's your freebie. You get a nice freebie, you know, it gets you enticed and you want to keep playing, you know, further. You know, I know why they do it, but I would like it to be more through, yeah, either a quest line or, you know, just drop out in the world, play the game and it drops, you know?
Yeah, no, I agree. I feel like them putting in exotics into the season pass itself, it almost devalues the exotic weapons. And especially during a time when we don't have a ton of new exotics, I think that putting any of them under the season pass, I mean, it's a missed opportunity because they can tell a story. They can make you go on this fun adventure, or perhaps even, you know, think about how Destiny 1 had their exotic quest lines that just kind of dropped randomly from turning in bounties, and then you start the quest to actually get the weapon. I think
that was super grindy, but I did like it.
It made it feel like, you know, you earned it, whereas now it's like, well, I bought this thing and it just dropped at season rank 1. It just feels like they can do a lot more in terms of storytelling and
with a full legendary armor set too. You get the full legendary armor set and you get the exotic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So give us less stuff in the season pass, Bungie, please. Or here's an idea. They can add special, really cool ornaments.
How about question marks? You know, don't tell us what we're getting. Put it at like level 50 or 60 or 70 or something of the season pass and put a question mark there so we don't know what it is.
But, you know,
I don't know. We're That's just a thought.
quickly because of internet and Reddit and, you know, YouTube.
So. Yeah. I mean, you know, that's part, you know, you'll get some people who will like that and other people that don't like it. You know, people, casual players probably enjoy getting a exotic Reddit at the, you know, Reddit rank one of the season pass, of the battle pass. So.
Yeah, no, I know what you're saying. I mean, I think for me, I kind of missed the system we had in the old days when, you know, you actually earned those exotics. It made them feel special, a little bit more special. And now, like, exotics don't feel as, doesn't feel like I earned it as much as it did before.
I feel like if they made just a few tweaks, though, it would be right at the, you know, it would be right at the sweet spot, because you do get exotics to drop out in the world when you're playing the game, and an exotic exotics do pop out of the boss, some of the bosses. Like, I'll get a random exotic, just like boom, just like pop out of the boss, and like, oh sweet, got another exotic, and you know, usually it's a light bump too, you know, when you get one. So that's pretty good.
And you know, we have one other thing to mention. With the new season, we have Legendary Lost Sectors. I have not played them yet because I've been pretty much focusing on leveling up my character.
I've done one.
Legendary Lost Sectors.
I have done one on my Hunter and Warlock, and they are tough. Let me tell you.
I was just reading the requirements. Yeah, I haven't done them, but yeah, they spook me.
You have to solo it if you want to get the exotic.
Yeah, I don't like doing things alone.
Yeah, and I've done it. I did solo it, and it is sweaty. And you'll have 15 minutes to do it. If you don't do it in 15 minutes, you're tough luck. You have to try again.
So how does this exotic work in the Legendary Lost Sector? Do you have to complete it in under 15 minutes to get
the... beat the boss in under 15 minutes and nab the loot. Now, just beating the boss is not going to do it. You got to raid the chest. You got to loot the chest. The problem is sometimes you don't have either the time or any ammo left to kill the rest of the enemies after the boss, because they're there. So you literally have to make a mad dash for the chest while getting shot at, like, from all over. And that's what I did twice when I beat it. I literally beat the boss, and then I just dashed as fast as I could for the chest. And I was able to loot it both times, and then got obliterated right afterwards. So, but the one time I got the exotic, it wasn't new. It wasn't a new exotic, unfortunately. It was one from past seasons. And the other time, a bunch of heavy ammo popped out of the chest. I'm like, what is this? What? My consolation prize, I guess. A bunch of heavy ammo just pops out, you know, so. You have to have a strategy. You have to have a loadout because they lock your loadout. So you have to have a loadout strategy in place to get it done, because there's champions in there. There's barrier champions. There's overload champions. And you have to have your loadout set perfectly, because you have to be able to stun those champions. If you can't stun those champions, you're pretty much done. The good thing is you get three lives while you're in there, but you can get more lives as you, each champion you beat, you can get an extra life. They add an extra life to you. So I thought that was kind of cool. Like, I know it was tough and it was difficult, but when I got it done, I felt like, man, I just did something really hard, and, you know, it wasn't that great of a reward. But when you do get that new exotic, cause I'm trying to get that Baskrix, starts with a B. The helmet for the hunter that allows me to basically shift out of time. Like, that's what I'm trying to get.
Shift out of time. What does that mean?
It's like basically, you're in one spot 1 minute, and then you're like, you could show up on the other side of the enemy, but it's different from Blink, because you don't jump in the air to do it. You can actually shift on the ground.
So like, it's pretty much what all the cheaters do in the Crucible. When you're shooting them, they're in one spot, and then...
Yeah, it's almost like lag like switching.
The side of the room, yeah. But
you can actually do it with this exotic, yeah. So, yeah, I'm trying to get it because I want to play around with it because I miss Blink. I miss Blink. Like, I miss my Blink and Hunter from D1. I don't know why they only gave Blink back to Warlock. So yeah, I did it, and I'm going to try to do it again if they have one. I don't know if I'll do it tonight, but maybe tomorrow, because I really want to get that helmet for the Hunter and the other exotics for the other characters too, the new exotics.
What light level are the enemies at in the Lost Sectors?
1250.
1250. Oh, wow. What level were you when you did it?
1230? I think it was 1230. So I was right at the threshold, 1230 or 1229, I think. And it still was very hard, very difficult. Because it's just the enemies can just one-shot you if you're not careful. Like the champions, they will one-shot you. And then there's a bunch of shanks in there, like the one in the fall in the Cosmodrome, the Exodus Garden or whatever it's called. Exodus 2A, I think it's called. There's just tons of shanks in there. There's servitors that will shoot you. There's the champion captains that will destroy you with one hit. And even the dregs. The dregs can kill you in one hit, too. So it's,
now, are there any loadouts that you recommend for successfully completing the legendary sector?
Yes, a fully masterworked Izanagi's Burden with the catalyst done in your primary slot. I would say a submachine gun, like the what is that? The shock. You know how the shotgun was from Warmind. The one do you like a lot? The Ikelos submachine gun. With make sure you have a mod of the I would say the barrier on your armor, the anti-barrier mod. And for my heavy, what was I using? Oh, sword. I was using guillotine, fallen guillotine. You want to use your fallen guillotine because you can take it down the servitors. And you can also, once you stun that champion, you can take it down with the fallen guillotine. It does work on those guys. And you want to make sure that you have, because unfortunately, if you have Izanagi's Burden equipped, you can't put on a overload champion piece of gear. So, because the only other one is for auto rifle, I believe, and there was one other, but it unfortunately doesn't fit the loadout. I think it was just auto rifle. There's a grenade. There's an overload grenade that you can use stasis subclass or your solar subclass, and that overload grenade will stun the champion, the overload champions. And you got to rely on that grenade. So you want to make sure you spec your discipline high enough too, so you can get that grenade back in time. So you're not waiting forever to get your grenade once you use it. And I would say that was my loadout. I used stasis. I used the stasis loadout, and had a lot of success.
Good advice. And the only thing that I don't have would be the Izanagi's catalyst. I don't think I got it in time. So that's the one thing that I'll be with a disadvantage when it comes to the new activity.
Yeah, because you do so much damage with that honed edge. When you put all four rounds into one, you can wreck with that one, those shots, you know, when you take that, those shots.
Yeah. And, you know, we also have, in addition to the new Season of the Hunt that just launched this past week, we have the new raid that's coming out Saturday. And I'm curious, will either of you be playing the new raid, whether it be this coming weekend or anytime in the near future?
I might give it a shot. I've actually never raided in Destiny. I'm spooked. My husband, he played Destiny 1 on our PS4, and I was able to watch that. And some of the raids I saw, I was like, oh, yeah, this is intense. Seems like the group has to really, really work together. So I'm thinking maybe it's finally time to maybe give something a shot for once, just to see how it goes.
Yeah.
And where are you playing Destiny 2 Beyond Light?
On my PC.
Okay. Well, maybe after we beat the raid, we might be able to take you through.
Ooh.
After
we
learn the ropes. I mean, the first couple of times might be a little tough, and it might take a while, to say the least.
I imagine so. Everyone has to be working in unison.
Yeah, day one will be very difficult because of the contest modifier. The enemies are going to hit very hard in there. So, yeah, I'm trying to get my... Because they disable the artifact for the raid. So you can't rely on its power or anything like that. I don't know if you can rely on its abilities. You might be able... I don't know if they said you can rely on its abilities or not. We'll have to see it in the TWAB. But I know they disable the power for it. So I think without the artifact, I think I'm at like 1226 right now. I'd like to get to 1230 without the artifact. That way I can be right at level, you know, because you can't do more damage over 1230 because of the contest modifier with it being in place.
So essentially you want to be 1230 without the seasonal artifact.
You want to be 1230, like, to be right at level and to be able to do maximum amount of damage, you want to be at 1230.
Now, is there any benefit to being above that or no?
No, nope.
Okay.
No, maybe the first couple encounters there is, but not at the end. There isn't. Nope. 1230, it caps at 1230 because of the contest modifier.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. Cool. And yeah, I'm excited. I think my character currently is 1240 for my highest level character. Now, I do have a plus 11 artifact, so I think I might have to bump my character up to 1241 to really get that maximum impact. So that's going to be something I'll be working on between tonight and tomorrow before the new raid. And I don't think we're getting any maintenance mode, are we, before the new raid kicks off?
I think they did some brief maintenance today, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
So hopefully not. Hopefully they'll let people grind tonight and tomorrow and a little bit on Saturday before it actually is raid time.
Yeah. And is there anything specific that you both are excited about with the new Deepstone Crypt raid that we'll be playing very soon?
Just the new raid, the environment, you know, the mechanics, puzzles, the things that Bungie has surprises in there for us, I'm sure. There's, you know, how it's going to be tied in with the story. All that, I guess, you know, like the watching, you know, people go for it. Try to get worlds first, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I think for me, I'm kind of excited to see how they incorporate the darkness in the new raid, because, I mean, clearly the darkness is a pretty large theme in this new season and this expansion. So it's going to be interesting to see how this all comes together. Who are we fighting as the main raid boss? What are the new mechanics that we're gonna have to learn, and the environment?
Did you guys play the story in Beyond Light, the campaign? Did you guys both beat it?
Yes.
Do you remember when Aramis said to one of her generals to prepare the body in the crypt? So she sent one of her generals to the crypt.
Yes.
To prepare the body, whatever that means. So there's some definite, like, you know, there's some implications. There's some things that Bungie has surprises in there, I'm sure. Prepare the body, you know, could be some sort of exo, like super, super exo, like warrior we have to fight in there or something. Because they've been really tight-lipped about this. They have not said really anything about what's going to be in the raid leading up to it. They had a raid race trailer, but I don't think they showed anything from the raid. They showed stuff from past raids. when people were doing the raid races, like people from Redeem and other people. So
although they did show us like live locations from different parts of the world, I think that has something to do with the new raid. These are small hints.
Right. I mean, there's breadcrumbs. Bungie has breadcrumbs out there. We've seen those spooky trailers with the exo like skull cracking kind of like thing. It's going to be exo based because we're going to the Deepstone Crypt, which is the birthplace of the exos. So there's going to be something to do with exos in there for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Like I can almost guarantee that. I'm sure there's gonna be exos. I'm sure there's gonna be Vex. There'll probably be Vex in there. Yeah.
I'm really excited. I cannot wait for Saturday. In fact, yesterday I did some shopping. I went to the store and I got a bunch of snacks and I got plenty of drinks and water so I can stay hydrated and not really have to leave the house because I know, you know, when the new raid comes out, my poor dog, oh man, he gets somewhat neglected during that time period. But I try to get prepared as much as I can ahead of time for the new raid. And also, you know, take breaks because the doggy has to go out for a walk periodically. So we will be taking some breaks. And I'm not expecting to get worlds first. I don't think that's a realistic thing for me at this point. I'm not that good. However, I definitely hope to maybe get it done in the first 24 hours. I know it's going to be really challenging, but I have a good feeling about it.
Yeah, I want to think that way too, but I'm also thinking about Saturday is going to, like, I have so many chores I have to do around my house that day too. So I got to figure out, I got to balance my life around, you know, when I'm going to play this raid and stuff too. So that's the difficult thing. Cause I'm up against the weather too. I mean, the weather is, you know, it's still not even going to be great that day, but if I don't, I know, and this is me problems. Just if I don't get outside and pressure wash the outside, I don't know when I'm going to get a chance to do it and everything. So kind of like up against that.
I have an idea. You got four kids, you know, I'm just saying, I'm sure pressure washing the house can't be that difficult. And
no, hey, I'm not going to make them do it. I want to try out my new pressure washer. Like I bought it for that reason. Cause you know, it's like getting a new toy and be able to try it out, you know? And it's like, I don't think my kids are going to be here this weekend either. So I don't think it's, but you know, it's, I'll figure it out. I'll think of something.
Okay. Well, maybe we'll create some more incentives for you to actually do the raid, but we're going to talk about that in just a little bit. But before we do, we have some more stuff to talk about. We have a new Bungie Weekly update, or This Week at Bungie, and Shadow Price, what's new with the news from Bungie this week?
Well, the Season of the Hunt is now live. Bungie has released a new web lore out there for people who want to dive into that to get a little bit of a backstory. And you can, it's Immolent Part 1 and Immolent Part 2 is on the Bungie website. So at your leisure, everybody, you know, who is interested in that can jump in and check it out. The Wrathborn hunts have begun for Season of the Hunt. And you want to say that the next stop in the season is the Deepstone Crypt Raid. And they also, after that, have activities for us. You know, they're not saying that's not all that we're getting in this season. We're also going to get the Dawning pretty soon. Trials of Osiris is returning on the 27th, I believe. We're going to get a new Iron Banner coming back. And more. So, but this weekend is they're going to turn their eyes to the world's first race, and that starts at Saturday, November 21st at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. And the world's first winners are going to be announced 2 days later on Monday, November 23rd. So Bungie are going to go through and comb through all those teams that are vying to be world's first to verify who will be the victors. And there's some reminders they want you to know for contest mode. Contest mode will cap all players at 20 power below each encounter for 24 hours. The artifact power will be disabled during the contest mode. So the power from the artifact. I'm guessing the mods you can use, but the power will be disabled. Your team's power cap goal is 1230 for all encounters. And being above 1230, like I said earlier, will not provide any additional advantage in the final fight. So what do you guys think of that?
It's going to be really hard. It's not going to be easy. I'm actually curious, if you're above 1230, will it give you an advantage before the last encounter? Because they kind of made it seem
it almost seems like it does. Yeah. But where it all counts at the end, it's not going to give you an advantage from what sounds like. Because they said the contest mode will cap players 20 power below each encounter. It'll cap you. So, for example, say the first encounter is let's just say for 1230 for argument's sake. If they say the contest mode is going to cap players at 20 power below, you're not going to be able to 1210. You're not getting above 1210 because they're capping you 20 below.
Yeah. So even if you're like, you know, 1245,
it doesn't matter.
It's not going to matter because whatever. 20 light below at every encounter. So it's not really going to give you any advantage there.
Right.
Okay. Yep.
You know, I mean, unless it's like 1250, if it's like 1250, then if you're at like, you can only, the highest you can be is like 1230. Which would that's the cap for the raid is 1230. So I'm guessing it's going to be lower than that. That's why my guess said 1210. I was thinking like maybe that first encounter would be like 1230, but they're capping you 20 below that power level. So,
yeah, you know, I mean,
it doesn't give anybody an advantage. It gives everybody an equal playing field, basically. That's what this is for. It's set up an equal playing field for everybody to have a chance.
I'm okay with, you know, everybody having a fair chance at getting the raid completed. Nobody feels like they have an advantage or that you have any incentive to continue grinding beyond that 1230 power. Because, I mean, to me, in the past, I think that there were unfair advantages before contest mode was active in the game. So I do think this creates more leveled playing field. So I'm okay with that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So they're making some tweaks to Stasis. It was a bit too powerful. It came out of the gate.
Really?
Swinging.
No, no, it's not too powerful, especially not in the Crucible.
Yeah. So hotfix 3.0.03 is incoming to prevent impact on the upcoming raid, because apparently people were melting bosses out in the world with Stasis with no problem. And Bungie had to get in and do some immediate fixes on that subclass. So they also go on to say that there will be loot, and they're talking about the world's first raid belt, the world's first raid title, and that it's a belt and it looks really cool. And, you know, whoever gets it is going to be very lucky because it looks awesome. And also, you know, just, you know, it'll show their achievement basically too. But that's not all. You can also get, everybody can get this. If they complete the raid within 24 hours, you get the day one raid emblem, which also looks pretty cool. And then you can also get yourself your hands on the jacket. Looks like a winter parka. It looks interesting. And then there's a vest, I guess. Now, is that vest, is that something, is that separate that's next to it? Or is that part of the parka?
It's part of the jacket. I think it.
Oh, that's the inside of the parka. Yeah. Probably,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, probably.
What do you guys think of it?
It might be detachable. Like, so you could just wear the vest and then not have the parka part. Yeah.
What do you guys think of it? It looks warm.
Yeah, it looks really warm, especially being in Florida.
Yeah, I was going to say, living in Houston, something like that's not super useful. But if I was in a northern state, I'd definitely be a...
I'm in upstate New York.
Like, yeah, no, it's something like this. It'd look neat. And then you'd occasionally have a Destiny fan going, nice parka.
See, I'm really conflicted about this jacket because I really want the raid jacket. But at the same time, I'm in Florida.
Yeah.
I'm never going to get a chance to really wear it unless I travel someplace cold. And I'm not really into cold weather. So, you know, I might travel back home to New York to see family. But, you know, that means I get to wear this jacket once or twice a year. If even that, because I'm going to try to, you know, make an appearance during the summer, not necessarily during the winter season. So, yeah. It's tough. What do you think, Shadow Price, about this jacket?
I mean, it looks comfy, but it's definitely not their best jacket, I feel like.
Yeah.
Personally. I mean, I think, like, what was the one for Shadowkeep? I thought it looked awesome. For the Garden of Salvation raid. And I think the Last Wish one, that looked really cool too, didn't it? When they did that one. But I mean, it's still, I don't know if I would buy it though. I don't know. What do you guys think? Would you guys buy something like this?
I'm torn because, like, you know, if I wasn't in Florida, I maybe would. But because I'm in Florida, I know I'm never going to wear it. So I'm almost more inclined to get the other jacket that's out right now. That pretty much anyone can buy. It's the, I don't know if it's called the Vanguard jacket, but it's available on the Bungie store right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's might be one to look at then. If you know, and everybody can get that one, that's pretty cool. But there's a few deadlines dates to they wanted to point out. The deadline to claim the reward code for this jacket is December 31st, 2020 at 9 a.m. Pacific time. And the deadline to purchase it is just 3 hours. Oh, I'm sorry, not 3 hours, but at 11:59 p.m. Pacific Standard Time that same day. If you do want that raid jacket, keep in mind those dates. If you do end up completing in the time frame, and you have till, I believe it's December 1st, I think, to complete it, to complete the raid. December 1st, 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time to get your jacket, and you have to the 31st to purchase it.
And by the way, the other jacket is called Guardian of the Last City.
Cool.
And I think it's a pretty cool jacket. It looks pretty sweet. So I may have to pick up this other jacket instead. Even though it would be really cool to have a raid jacket.
Well, next, they talk about some new security measures that are coming to PC for free-to-play account access and high-stake activities. We're talking SMS verification. So what is SMS verification? Bungie has basically implemented a quick account validation step for free-to-play players who want to access our high-stakes PvP modes in Destiny 2 on PC. Free-to-play accounts, PC only, will need to link and verify a cell phone number to their accounts via Bungie.net before being able to access those activities. And what activities are high-stakes? You ask. Those activities that they describe are Trials of Osiris, Iron Banner, and competitive PvP playlists are examples. And as this feature rolls out, Bungie will be looking at how it can grow and potentially expand it to alternate activities in the future. And so why are they doing this? Well, unscrupulous players can negatively impact everyone's gameplay experience and undermine the hard-earned achievements of others. Bungie takes the threat of cheating seriously. We will continue implementing systems to help verify that accounts engaged in Destiny 2 activities are honoring the code of conduct and terms of service. Okay, and so they say, as players, what do you need to do? And they say, well, go to say, if you are free to play Destiny 2 PC player, you will receive a notice in-game the first time you try to access a protected activity. And then this will provide you with a verify now link to follow to Bungie.net and process your SMS linking. When you enter your cell phone number and request a verification code, you will receive a quick text message with Bungie code pound, 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 pound. Once you enter that code on the Bungie.net page to complete your verification process, you can sign back into the game to get immediate access to the activity you want to play. Wow. I kind of like this, though, because what it's going to do is I think it's going to hopefully corral some of these cheaters, because people aren't going to want to create new phone numbers, like, or get a new phone number every time. Like, Bungie is going to have their phone number. They're going to have access to, you know, to their phone number, you know, and then they can just like say, send a text. Oh, we caught you doing this. You're banned now. You know, and they can ban that account that's tied to that phone number, you know, and
you're going to get a phone call from the Drifter.
Yeah. Like, sorry, Hotshot. Hotshot.
You're dead. Cabal on the field.
Yeah, I kind of like this. It's a step in the right direction. It's, you know, it's basically keeping, you know, these players accountable that are going to use methods to circumvent the game, you know, to try to find ways to cheat. So I think this is a good step in the right direction.
Yeah, I mean, I'm okay with this. I have no intentions on cheating, and I play on one specific account, and I'm definitely not a free-to-play player. I mean, I always spend too much money with Bungie with every game release. So it doesn't really impact me directly, but in a sense, it does by not having to go up against so many cheaters, especially in the Crucible when you play Trials and somebody just magically disappears from one area of the map to another. I mean, you know, it's going to prevent some of that. So I'm happy to see Bungie being more proactive about these kind of things, because especially since the game came out on PC when things were switched from Battle.net to Steam, I think we got quite a few additional problems with cheating and those types of things. So I'm glad they're addressing it.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. So they go on to talk about the Game to Give 2020 fundraising campaign. Bungie's always been great with raising money for charity and doing some great charity work. And sounds like this time is no different. So what is it? It's a charity event to support the Bungie Foundation and Children's Miracle Network hospitals. The benefits help sick kids across the country. And you can host your event from December 1st to December 13th. There's going to be a 24-hour streamathon, and the donation incentives are a $25 donation will earn you the 2019 Miss Blossoms emblem and Gilded Shell Exotic Ghost. If you missed them last year, this is your chance to get your hands on them. And a $50 donation will earn you the above items plus the new Lightkeeper's emblem. So This is good stuff. Bungie's done great stuff with charity, like I said, and basically it's nice when they're able to do these things to help out the less fortunate.
Yeah, and I think the proceeds, 100% of them go to the Children's Miracle Network to help sick kids. So yeah, it's a great cause, and you know, if you're able to donate, you get something pretty cool as a reward, and Bungie has been very, very supportive of different important causes in the world, and I'm really happy they're doing this.
And now we get into the nitty-gritty. Tune in the darkness. We're going to be talking about stasis and the things that Bungie has deemed that are outside the lines of, fair in the game right now. So the development team said that they've seen a lot of feedback on Stasis since Beyond Light launched last week. And, you know, that's a lot of fun to use, but certain aspects of this new subclass can be frustrating to go against. Looking at you, Shadebinder Warlocks, and that they have a few minor tweaks planned to go out in hotfix 3.0.0.3 this week. Their goal here is to do some early tuning to rein Shadebinders back in while still maintaining their overall efficacy and power fantasy. So here's some of the stasis changes. Here's the first change. The stasis breakout damage is reduced from 110 down to 90 HP. And that they have adjusted the curve that reduces breakout damage using resilience. Increased damage reduction affects resilience has so that higher tiers of resilience are more valuable. And that caps out at 90 resilience. So that's the cap for it. Penumbra Blast, the Stasis Warlock melee projectile speed was reduced by 20%. The Penumbra Blast, Stasis Warlock melee, range reduced was 28 meters. Now it's down to 16 meters. The Winter Wrath, Stasis Warlock super duration reduced from 30 seconds to 24 seconds. The Winter's Wrath light attack, Stasis Warlock super cost reduced 5% per burst down to 4.5% per burst. The Cold Snap Seeker speed reduced by 23%. And now this is against Guardians. This is the part that, you people in the Crucible want to pay attention to. The Cold Snap Freeze duration lowered from 4.75 seconds to 1.35 seconds. The Ice Flare Bolt's freeze duration lowered from 4.75 seconds to 1.35 seconds. The Penumbra Blast, Stasis, Warlock, Melee, the freeze duration lowered from, you guessed it, 4.75 seconds to 1.35 seconds. And the Winter's Wrath Heavy Attack, Stasis, Warlock, Super, no longer affects players who are not encased. These are great changes. And they needed to happen. Because being frozen for 5 seconds just, like, destroys balance. It destroys game balance in the Crucible. It, you know, you literally can't do nothing while you're frozen. The enemy just has fair game at you while you're trying to break out of this thing. Now that you only can be frozen for 1.35 seconds, I think it's a lot more fair, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with this because, I mean, especially in the Crucible, it was really frustrating where, like, you really couldn't do anything, you know? Nope. And at that point, it's like, oh, I got frozen. Okay, I'm going to take a few seconds to just not do anything because it's like, I can't.
So yeah, I'm just going to die because either I'm going to have no health when I break out of this thing. I'm going to have no health when I break out of this thing. And so I'm going to, one shot's going to kill me. Just one little pellet from something, you know? So it's nice that they have to be on their game. If they freeze you, they literally have 1.35 seconds to try to, you know, and you have, hopefully you have a chance to break out of it even sooner than that. If your resilience is higher, have to be tested when the hotfix goes live. So
yeah, I play a warlock and I've been mostly doing PvE. I have felt way too powerful. So I'm not surprised by these changes. And having played like PvP in general, it's never fun to be forced to stop. Like, it just is not a good game mechanic in general. And then it was 5 seconds almost. That's
an eternity.
That's an eternity in a game that's moving so quick. And
it is.
I'll be honest, in PvP, Guardians a lot of times feel like a piece of paper. You're going to die quickly either way. But now you have to sit there and freeze and not move. No reaction. It's punishing.
It is. You know, that was the most, like, you know, debilitating thing, like mm-hmm. just not be able to move because you rely on your movement. You rely mm-hmm. on your speed. You rely on your gunplay. You know, you can cover so much ground in 5 seconds. So being frozen for 5 seconds just it just threw the balance all out of whack, you know, and it just like, it basically made doing that as a warlock, using that subclass and using those, you know, that freeze method, that was the de facto method to winning in the Crucible. Mm-hmm. Like everybody was using it. Like you saw full teams of warlocks, mm-hmm. Shadebinder warlocks. And it's like, oh my God, here we go. So I'm glad that they're reining it in, because, you know, I don't think that it should completely be disabled, because, you know, it's a power fantasy. You know, you still want to feel powerful, but there's got to be some sort of balance, though. You know, there's got to be a system of checks and balances. So that's my say on it.
I think, you know, I agree. I think that this is a welcoming change, and I kind of expected it, you know, sooner rather than later.
With the raid, too, even, you know, because people were just they were destroying bosses with casting their super, like, you know, raid bosses, like in, you know, the other raids, like the Last Wish and Garden raids. So, yeah, welcome change, I feel like. So on the subject of loot, the development team has some words they want to say about how they're going to improve loot this season. They say that as Beyond Light has launched, we've been tracking your feedback around loot, particularly weapons, and wanted to take a moment to let you know how we are processing it. Today, we're going to talk mostly about the short term with more information to follow in the future around long term as we work through those problems. Infusion caps are intended to help keep Destiny 2 evolving and ensuring that every release, the new rewards are exciting and relevant to the meta. However, they do agree with your feedback and that there's currently not enough variety in the world loot weapons available to players this season. And that to that end, we are adding back in a selection of weapons that will help alleviate this issue. They'll also be watching to see how the landscape changes with the addition of weapons from season 12 in this week's raid launch. And they also agree that getting near cap weapons from random world drops is frustrating. Thus, we are removing those from the pool and are weighting drops more heavily towards newer weapons. And that there's an adjustment to the world loot legendary weapons pool you'll see with the November 24th hotfix. One of the first thing it's going to do is going to remove all legendary weapons that hit their infusion cap at the end of this season. And they're going to add all of the 7 Seraph weapons from season 10. They're adding all of the season 11 seasonal and planetary reprisal weapons. And then the weight drop chances, so that the newer than an item is, the more likely it is to drop. They say that feedback never stops, and we're always excited to hear how you're feeling about Destiny 2 and keep it coming. And they're planning on evolving this past Beyond Light. They want to try it and see what happens, and that they're going to be watching the feedback as, you know, they go along, because they're hoping to make changes to this to hopefully have a better long-term strategy in place of how they're going to deliver us loot. So, I mean, this is bittersweet for me. This is almost like, okay, thank you for adding those weapons back, you know, from those past seasons. Problem is they're old weapons. You know, I wanted new stuff, even more new stuff. I wanted more loot to chase, more new loot to chase. So that's the disappointing part for me, is I want a new, more new. And almost this is like going against their sunsetting mantra in a way.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting you mentioned the sunsetting, because I think that my biggest gripe with sunsetting was the concern about them not introducing enough new things into the game. And historically, I know that Bungie has not been able to produce enough new weapons in quite a while. So, you know, seeing this being a real concern that there's really not enough new weapons, I think that it almost makes sunsetting kind of, I wouldn't say unfair, but in a way it's unfair, because essentially, you're taking something away from me that I built out with the perfect role, with the perfect stats, and then I have to regrind again to get that same weapon back. And that to me does not make any sense, because the reason why sunsetting was introduced was to make you not use the old meta and to play with something completely new. But if there's not enough new stuff in the game, it defeats the purpose of the sunsetting as a whole. And it kind of makes me against the idea of sunsetting more now that I'm hearing about these issues. And, you know, I tried to give Bungie a benefit of the doubt when it comes to the rewards and weapons, thinking, okay, you know, as we continue playing the new season, there's going to be a lot more new things to chase after. But it seems like that isn't necessarily the case. And while I'm happy that Bungie is starting to address these issues and they're being proactive about addressing the community's concern, I still think that, you know, it's not enough when you're offering this new content, people are paying money for this new content, and not only that, but you're, in my opinion, not really respecting my time as a player by making things just sunset for me to have to chase the same items. I don't agree with that. And I really hope that Bungie is able to introduce a lot of new loot into the game in upcoming seasons to kind of course correct and make sunsetting a more easier to digest thing in the game.
Yeah. I mean, and I was for sunsetting, but now that they basically weren't able to do what I thought they could do, but then realizing, like, when we saw trailers, we saw things, we didn't see tons of loot. And when they rolled stuff, and it's like, oh, yeah, like what you were saying has kind of come to light here, that they weren't able to create enough new loot. You know, and I mean, we still haven't seen everything yet this season. You know, there's things we're going to get from the raid, and, you know, these Wrathborn hunts are going to change, and, you know, who knows, like some other things could, but still, it's not going to be enough. It's not going to be like, remember in Destiny 1 where we got all the vendors reset, you know, when we got a new DLC, like you could go to all the different vendors and they had new gear, and there was new gear drops out in the world too, and the loot pool. And I miss those times when we got that, because I feel like that loot was, you know, more plentiful than what we're getting now. No?
Yeah, no, I agree. And that was my biggest concern with sunsetting. And it's a little sad to see that this is what is happening in the game, because this was kind of my concern and worry when they talked about sunsetting becoming a real thing in the game.
Yeah. What are your thoughts, Victoria, on this?
I missed a lot of seasons, so.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's so one thing I definitely did after writing the book is I took a pretty long break because of how deep I was into Destiny lore for a long while. I actually started playing again, I think, in October. So for me, it's like, oh, there's a bunch of stuff I missed. So I kind of benefit from it. But I am sad with some of my old weapons, because some of them I'm like, oh, I can't increase it anymore. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's cool. I get to sit there. I definitely rolled stats for this, and now I can't do that anymore.
you just, it's not viable in any kind of end game style content or anything past, like, as you know, it's like they're stuck at the highest they can get to is 1060.
And I'm just like,
And I pretty much deleted everything that was 1060 power, with the exception of, you know, a few weapons like Horror's Least and, you know, some of the older raid weapons. But anything else, I deleted, because there's no point. And in a way, I don't have as much attachment to the weapons and the loot that I'm getting in the game, because I know there will come a time when all of this is going to get deleted, you know, and it kind of sucks because, you know, I like chasing after something that can become a trophy weapon, right? And now the only way you really have that is with exotic weapons. And even then, you know, the idea of earning it has kind of been diminished in some way because you can just go into your season pass and you have exotics there, you know? So it's like, it doesn't feel as special as it did before. And I definitely will, you know, take this into account when it comes to, am I going to put in the time and effort to chase after a weapon that I know is going to be made obsolete at some point?
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's like, it's bittersweet, like I said, for me. Like, and I know I bring this up all the time. It's like, if you have to, just pull from the D1 loot pool. Just bring all those legendaries. Bring some of those blues and legendaries back. So there were so many special weapons in D1. Some of those legendaries were just iconic. You know, and yes, we are going to probably get Fatebringer and all those back with Vogg, you know, and I am looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to getting Fatebringer again and Vision and all those.
Can I ask one thing? Where's Grasp of Malak? I mean, we're fighting Novita or Novidia. I don't even know how you say that name.
We're fighting Novidia.
We're fighting Novidia. It's a trend to get a graphics card.
Novota or something.
Novota. Okay. Yeah. You know, we're fighting Novota and there's no Grasp of Malak. They have the strike back, but again, the weapon that was so, so special.
They added a arbitrary shotgun, basically. Xenoclast, I think it's called.
And yeah, but don't you get Xenoclast from like any activity any in the game? Because I've been getting
any of the strikes, I believe. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't agree with this. I think we need strike specific loot like we had in the past. And
I agree.
Where's Grasp of Malak? Come on, guys.
I agree. Because I mean, there's a grenade launcher that drops in Gambit that's specific, you know, to that. Like it's you know, specific to Gambit. And then there's a pulse rifle that drops in the Crucible. Like, it's just one weapon. Like, and see, this is what I'm talking about. The game is still loot starved. I feel like. Like, unfortunately, this was a very rough year. And they, you know, they dumped their development time into the world more than, you know, anything, obviously. The world and the story. And unfortunately, the loot suffered a little bit. You know, I mean, let's be honest. The loot did suffer, I feel like.
Yeah. Well, you know, on the bright side, we have plenty of games to play, you know, and I mean, we're going to play through the content. We're going to enjoy it. But, you know, at the same time, I wonder if Beyond Light will be an expansion that we're going to continue playing 1 month, 2 months from now. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe in a way that's okay because we're getting so many other games that deserve our time. But I do miss that time in Destiny when like there was always something new to do and chase after. And Destiny 1 really, you know, feels very special and feels like we didn't quite know what we had in Destiny 1. You know, I mean, I think the expansions definitely felt a little bit more meaty, you know, with the Taken King, with Rise of Iron, and this feels a bit smaller, you know, and I know we expected it, but you know, it sucks in a way as well.
That's what I feel like that's missing. The biggest part that's missing is, you know, with those big expansions with Taken King, we got so much new loot, you know, even with Rise of Iron, we got a lot of new loot, you know? So that's the one part I feel like that's missing with this expansion. Otherwise, I'm really enjoying it. I really enjoyed the story. I'm enjoying the post story because there's some cool stuff you do with the Drifter. I'm not the Drifter, the Exo Stranger afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
The
environment's gorgeous.
Oh, the environment is absolutely gorgeous.
I find myself stopping and just staring at it sometimes. It's so pretty.
Yeah, and I really like the dynamic weather too. Mm-hmm. Even though it can be annoying getting blown blown all around by the wind.
Yeah, when you're in a blizzard, yeah. You're in a blizzard. It's like, oh, I can't see anything.
Yeah, and that's enjoyable for me because it really, like, you know, it immerses you into the world, into the gameplay, mm-hmm. you know, and I feel like they were able to nail that aspect, you know, but that the loot, I feel like the game is loot starved because there was one weapon to chase in the Crucible. There's one weapon to chase in Gambit and one to chase in the Strikes. They, you know, didn't add Strike exclusive loot. They didn't add a Grasp of Malak back, you know. So hopefully they'll take this feedback. And when they add those two Strikes from, you know, D1 back next season, that they'll remember, you know, what people are, you know, we want more loot. mm-hmm. You know, we want a reason to go into these places more often. We you know, this, and it's not a true, this isn't a true looter shooter. You know, it's not, you know, not the, we're not expecting the Borderlands, like, you know, loot explosions.
Yeah.
Like, that many guns. But we would like a little bit more meat on the bones. But,
yeah, no, it's still a gun game. Like, the guns are the iconic part of the game.
Right. Exactly.
I just wish we had more weapons, you know? Yeah. I mean, that's the one thing that's kind of missing right now for me. And I mean, otherwise, I really enjoy this expansion. I think there's quite a bit of post campaign activities for us to do. There's
a lot of endgame. Those lost sectors are tough. Let me tell you, that legendary lost sector solo is not easy. And not only is there a legendary one, there's a master one too. So I can't imagine the 1280 lost sector. Like, that's nuts. Yeah.
Now, my only thing is, like, you know, if I'm going to go through such a difficult activity, you have to reward me accordingly. Will they? That's the big question.
Their reward, it's a chance of the new exotics. And I mean, that is a good enough incentive.
Yeah. How many new exotics do we have to chase?
I think two per class. The hunter, so I think, six. has got a helmet and something else. And each character, I think, has two pieces of armor that you can get from there. Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll have to wait and see. But it's definitely an exciting time to be a Destiny fan. Lots of new stuff to play. We have the new raid coming out. And hopefully the raid loot is really plentiful and exciting. So I'm pretty excited to see what rewards we get in the new raid between the armor and the weapons and the hopefully exotics.
So, and you got the Wrathborn hunts out there too. You got the Empire hunts and things you do with Varix too after the campaign. There's a new activity. I don't know, like, I feel like they've teased it. I don't know when they're bringing it into the game, but it's like, it's a bunch of enemies, like, in like an arena like style thing. So,
like the Prison of Elders.
It might be like sort of like it, but I think it might be six man activity. It had those red triangles. Remember those red diamonds that were in the Garden of Salvation raid, where you had to like tether yourself to, you know, when you had to get the divinity for the divinity quest. It had those in there, and it was like, and from what I'm understanding, the things that people have said, I'm hearing it's called the Exo Stranger Challenges. So,
interesting.
It might open up after the raid, possibly. You know how, like, last year when they opened Garden Salvation, like, they also opened up the Vex Offensive, like, the same day and stuff. So, it might be something like that. They could surprise us on Saturday, or they might not drop it till Sunday, until after the 24 hours, or they'll wait till the next reset or something.
Well, so, we don't have too much more time to wait. We're going to find out soon enough. The raid kicks off this Saturday at 1 p.m. Eastern time. So we'll definitely be watching, we'll be playing, and we're excited for what's next. And Guardians, on that note, we have come to that time where we get to rate the Bungie weekly update, or this week at Bungie, in the form of spicy tuna rolls. And Victoria, as our guest, do you want to kick things off? How would you rate this week's Bungie weekly update in the form of spicy tuna between 1 and 5? 5 being bomb, 1 being not so good.
I think I'm going to go with a 4, because those changes to the Warlock, even though I play one, were necessary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could agree with that. I could definitely agree with that, having played in the Crucible against the Warlock Shadebinder. And yeah, I'm going to go half a point lower. I'm going to go 3.5, because of this whole doubling back and having to add these weapons back that, you know, where, you know, they took out of the game and then realized that we don't have enough loot. You know, they agree with us. There's not enough loot, and that the sunsetting is not completely working as intended when they're just adding some of those weapons back anyways. So it almost defeats the purpose a little bit. And yeah, like I said, it's bittersweet. But everything else is really cool. I like a lot of the, I like the stasis changes that they did. I think that is where necessary. You know, we got to look at some, the raid stuff, and, you know, the, what we're going to be, how we're going to, you know, get ready for that and the rewards and things like that. And there's also a whole nother section in here, a very long section of about the bugs that are in the game that they're working on. Like this expansion brought tons of bugs in with it, that they are trying to work probably around the clock to smash, especially in time for the raid too. So I say 3.5.
Yeah, I'm going to probably have to agree with Shadow Price. I think that, you know, between the sun setting and not having enough loot in the game to account for this change, I think that was a pretty big negative, especially with a game that's completely based on loot and rewards and the weapons and drops that you get. So I think in a way, Bungie really dropped the ball on this expansion in that regard. So I do have to take some points off of that. At the same time, I do think that Bungie is being pretty proactive about acknowledging these problems and, you know, at the very least wanting to fix them and trying. I think that adjusting the new super abilities, that was a good move because it balances the game a bit more. And I think the emblem was really cool for the new raid. Although the parka jacket, you know, not everybody lives in a cold climate. So, you know, that makes the jacket a little bit less ideal for guardians like myself who are in Florida, who wouldn't really get a chance to enjoy that jacket. So I'm going to give it a 3.5 out of 5 spicy tuna rolls.
And let's hope they have more in store. You know, like they said that this is short-term solutions and they're looking for a more long-term solution. So keep the feedback coming, you know, voice your concerns, you know, voice them out there, be respectful, but voice your concerns to Bungie and, you know, they'll take a look at it and they'll, you know, they are listening. So.
Yeah, no, well said. So, Guardians, on that note, we have come to that time. Victoria, thank you so much for being an amazing guest on the show tonight. It was such a pleasure to get to know you and everything that you do in our community with your incredible books and your blog and everything else that you've done in Destiny. So thank you so much for joining us tonight. And before we let you go, I do want to share with our audience where we can learn more about you and what you do.
Well, first, thank you for having me here. You can find all of my video game food recipes on the website pixelatedprovisions.com. It is updated weekly. You can also find me on Twitter, Twitch, and Instagram with the handle pixelatedvicka.
Awesome. Very cool. And Shadow Price, where can we learn more about you?
You can follow me on Twitter at ShadowPrice79. And you also hear on the Destiny Show podcast every Thursday night. Thank you so
very
much.
Cool. Very cool. And Guardians, you can find the Destiny Show podcast on every major podcasting platform. We're on Apple, we're on Spotify, we're on Google, and now we're also on Amazon Podcasts as well. You can also find us on the web at destinyshow.com. You can find us on Twitter at The Destiny Show, and you can find us right here on Twitch every Thursday night at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, twitch.tv/The Destiny Show. And Guardians, next week, we have an amazing, amazing Twitch streamer on the show. He's going to bring the vibes, and that is Amaze. We're going to bring him on the show. We're going to learn much more about him and what he does in our community. And we're going to continue the conversation about all things Destiny 2 Beyond Light. So Guardians, thank you so much for joining us tonight. And we hope you have an amazing evening. And we'll see you all next week. Good luck with the raid.
Bye-bye.
Bye.